from 4 till 7.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Cambridge 105.
Half past five, and we have a new series of interviews on Cambridge 105. In Meet the Neighbours, we're calling in on some of the people and businesses that we share the Gwydir Street Enterprise Centre with. To start off with, Lee Chambers called in on Barry from Brignall Bookbinders and started by asking him exactly what a bookbinder does.
Well, we restore, bind, repair, conserve any book. We can also make new books up, like for memorial services or a special present for someone who's retirement from work. And also we make boxes to put books in, because sometimes we get books which have gone too far and the customers can't really afford to spend that much on them. What we do, we put them in a box to conserve them and stop them getting deteriorated from the light and pollution.
So is it mainly old books that you would buy?
We do a lot more conservation and restoration work now. Years ago, when I first started my own business in 1982, we did do lots of journals, but now that journals are all online, so we had to sort of take a decision and then decide to do restoration, conservation and presentation volumes, which we like small runs or limited editions.
So what kind of books would you be restoring?
Well, we have a few book dealers and also collectors, and obviously the book dealers want the books in a reasonable condition so they can sell them. So we restore them for them. And then we have private individuals who have wonderful collection of books and buy the books a little bit cheaper. Then they come to us and then have them restored. And each book is different. So we have to check what sort of paper is printed on. If it's handmade paper, we have to make sure we restore it with handmade paper. We don't use a modern paper. And also a lot of the papers we use now are all acid free. And the conservation now is to make sure that all the books are conserved in that way.
So when you talk about bookbinding, I'm imagining the outside of the book, but it sounds to me, from what you're saying, that you're restoring every part of the book, yes. Pages as well.
Yeah, sometimes you find that some of the old books, the sewing is deteriorated, so we don't have much choice but to actually pull the book all the way down, repairing section up with, say, Japanese paper or handmade paper, and then the book is hand-sewn as it was originally. And sometimes a hand-sewn book can take 3 or 4 hours to sew, if not longer. And some of the sewers to today are not as good as some of the sewers when I first started doing bookbinding in 1972. And it really is a skill.
And where did you learn to be a bookbinder?
I learned my skill in bookbinders in Cambridge, which were in Green Street. And we started a 5-year apprenticeship. So I started in 72, and then in 1982, we were made redundant. And then we set my own business up, and we've been very successful since then.
And it's quite an old trade, isn't it?
It goes back,
what, hundreds of years?
Definitely. It goes back a long way. And say from 1400, we can even go back to the Egyptian days for the codex books. You have to sort of read up about the history of the books. And the books that we do are mainly from, say, 1500 upwards. And if you get to the medieval manuscripts, then it's a bit more of a different game for us. There is a specialised people in Cambridge who can do it, and we send people to them.
And what's the most valuable book that you've worked on?
Well, they're all valuable books, really, because some are sentimental value, and some of the value for the books we do, say, for the book dealers in London. Sometimes I've walked around taking the book home with me because it's that valuable, but then I realised it's actually better to lock it up in the safe here than take it, then walk home with it. They vary from, say, $250,000 downwards. Yeah.
Wow, that's quite something to be handling that much money in a book and have that in your hand.
If it's a medieval manuscript, we can repair the binding. But if the sewing's gone and the vellum manuscript needs a bit more conservation work on it, so we have some other people we can send them to. But when it comes to the binding, that's what we do most of all. We do a bit of paper conservation work. Not much cleaning, because, again, that's another specialised part of the trade. And We can do a small amount of cleaning, but if we need anything really done, we take it to a paper conservator, and we have two people we use.
These are all processes that need to be done by hand. They can't be mechanised.
All by hand. No way can you do anything by machine. We do have some machines here, but they're actually operated by hand.
And in this age of automated books and e-books and Kindles, it's quite nice to sort of speak to somebody who's actually handling paper and books and the original, the old-fashioned
yes.
kind of reading materials, if you like. Do you have a Kindle or do you prefer the...
No, I have no Kindle. I'd like read a newspaper. I don't actually read a lot of books. The only time I really read a book is if I go on holiday. And then it might start the book and I'll still bring the book back with me and have not finished it. So I'm not a very good person to say I'm a book collector or a book reader. Sort of. We have wonderful books here from, say, 1500s upwards, and each book is different and they're all nice to handle.
Yeah. And I'm guessing when you read, you're not the kind of person who cracks the spine of a book.
No. There's a way of opening a book, and I have it on the back of my business card, the best way to help to open a new book.
Which is?
Lay the book down, each board down, hold all the pages upright, and then you go left a few pages, and a few pages to the right, a few pages to the left, so it opens up in the middle of the book. You just do that three or four times, and it gently breaks the back of the book in. Because if you look in some books, say in the bookstores, and if you go into them, if you look down at the top, you can just see the pages are just separated from each other. That's where someone has opened the book and just gone, yanked it right open without due care and attention for the book. We call that start, when someone yanks a book open and you'll start, this will be the weakest part of the book.
Lee Chambers there chatting to Barry from Brignall Bookbinders, one of our neighbours in our Meet the Neighbours feature. We'll have another one of those pretty soon on 105 Drive.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive.
So starting off our entertainment hour in a short while's time, it's film and theatre with Sky and Hattie. Ahead of that, though, we're counting down the unsigned chart for what is week 95. We'll go through from 5 down to 1. But first, let's take a listen to the new entry from Nick Lowe, Nick, N-I-K. The song is Fool For You.
The top 5 records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
Mind. I know that you don't understand, 'cause you
So that's Nick Lowe, the new entry on the unsigned chart. He's from Bury St Edmunds, like my Auntie Ruby. Unlike her, though, Nick is an acoustic soul, pop, rock and blues crooner like no other. He is on the acoustic circuits in Cambridge, Norwich, Ipswich and London. He's been there for the last 2 years. He was a finalist in the national final of Live and Unsigned and got to play at the O2. He has also supported Gareth Gates on his 2012 summer tour, and wait for it, supported Chaz and Dave at the Abbey Fest last year.
Getcha!
Nick released his self-titled EP in December and is available to download from iTunes. More details about him at nicklowe.co.uk, and to avoid confusion with other Nick Lowe's, it's N-I-K. L-O-W-E, nicklowe.co.uk. Let's see now how everybody else has been doing this week.
The top five records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
We have a bit of a pantaloon problem in the far as we've lost trouser crisis. Elsewhere on the chart, at number five, Motor Tapes and Shaw. Number four, The Silent Majority, This Is Their Town. At number three, Too Cool Kid, Under Your Breath. At number two, Afterglow, Unlock Your Mind, which means we say congratulations to Mumford the Dog, who was in here yesterday, and Helium. Their song, Helium's Daydream Days, is at number one on the unsigned chart this week.
The unsigned chart on Cambridge 105.
Stars on a haunted night. I can tell you everything will be alright. Make a wish and live your life. Roll the dice. We'll I'm just trying to be nice. One day, I just don't want to leave this spectacular place and all the amazing life-changing opportunities will be gone. Whoa, 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 whoa. Take me away. Let's come back another day when the
That is the wonderful Helium, Daydream Days. They're at number one in the unsigned chart this week. I do hope that you heard them on with Tim yesterday evening on the New Music Generator programme. If you weren't able to catch that, then head along to the website cambridge105.fm. Right at the top of our Listen Again section is another chance to hear that show. And I've heard it all, but I'm going to tune in again. Listen online to that. Cambridge105.fm. Find lots of other shows as well, including another interview which Tim did yesterday when Tim was looking after this show. Thank you, Tim. I don't think I thanked you earlier on. But he caught up with some of the Cambridge RAG students who were taking part in Jailbreak 2014, including Zoe and Fanella, who managed to get, I think, all the way to Dubai, it was, by, I think they flagged down a BBC reporter in the street who they knew, and Oman, that was it, and as a result of that, they were able to make it all the way within a 36-hour time limit and raise a whole load of money for charity as well. So you'll find that. Cambridge105.fm is the place for that. And the other thing to mention, of course, if you're a local artist and a band, and then you too can get your music on Cambridge 105. Email Tim at cambridge105.fm. 6:23 on this Thursday evening of Cambridge 105 Film and Theatre now with Skye and Hattie. We've got a competition on the way, haven't we, amongst
Indeed,
other things?
Yes.
Okay, but where are we starting?
Well, we've got two of quite melancholy films this week, but they are exceptional pieces, and we'll start off with Inside Llewyn Davis. It's the new one from Joel and Ethan Coen, and it's a brilliantly deadpan portrait of a week in the life of a struggling Dylan-esque 60s folk musician.
I'm getting my silver tone. You get to play it if and only if you sing.
Right, yeah, okay. I can tell this is one of those things where I keep saying no and you think I'm just asking you to beg more.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, well, look, I'm not a trained poodle.
I thought singing was a joyous expression of the soul.
Yeah. All right. This one's early. Joe should like it.
If I had wings and nor a dove, I'd fly up the river to the one I love.
What are you doing?
What?
What is that? What are you doing?
Well, it's Mike's part.
Don't do that.
It's Mike's part.
I know
it's
what
1961,
it is. Don't do
and
that.
The folk scene in New York's Greenwich Village is booming. But talented young troubadour Llewyn Davis, played by Oscar Isaac, seems to be left behind. Sofa surfing, depressed and broke, he drinks too much and annoys just about everyone he meets as he tries to kickstart his solo career. To complicate matters further, he's impregnated foul-mouthed Jean Berkeley, played by Kerry Mulligan, who is the wife of his best mate Jim, played by Justin Timberlake. Llewyn is another of the Coen brothers' flawed yet essentially decent characters against whom fate seems to conspire. Unfolding over 7 days, this rapturously received Cannes Festival Jury Grand Prize winner bristles with typically mordant wit. The period setting is meticulously staged and the superb music supervised by T-Bone Burnett, who won the Grammy for his best-selling soundtrack to Coen Brothers' Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So, indeed, it's a very well-filmed, toned film. It's just...
It has that kind of documentary look about it, doesn't it, really?
It does capture the essence of the time. I'm not a huge fan of folk music, to be honest, but the songs bristled with such emotion. Oscar Isaac's as great as the title role.
Does he sing as well?
I don't really know
much about him. That's actually him doing the singing.
Yeah, and playing the guitar. And, yeah, he's tremendous. It just feels he's such a character so worn down by life, because it starts off that he was part of a folk duo and his partner commits suicide, and the clip you just heard is a song that they did together.
So that's why he's getting grumpy when the female singer joins in.
Yeah, exactly. So, it makes you wonder when you see what goes on in this week of his life, you know, why his partner did that, because it's just... It's so deadpan. It's really funny. And he's just like, how many bad things can happen to this guy? He's just a struggling musician wanting to make it. And, there's great supporting cast with John Goodman, Kerry Mulligan, Justin Timberlake. And there's a nice cat in it as well. So,
Cats are always worth it for filmic value.
So, I recommend it, certainly, if you're a fan of Coen Brothers' previous films and Brother, Where Art Thou? This is a nice musical stroke comedy drama.
Hattie, you're staying uncharacteristically quiet at this point.
I know, and that you would think that I didn't like it, but I did, actually.
I thought you told me you didn't see it.
No, I did see it, and I thought it was lovely. For me, it felt like a return to like classic Coen Brothers, the really good stuff, because...
Stop, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm breaking the microphone. Just turn the lights off 3 times. Don't touch anything.
Okay, I'm trying not to touch anything anymore. I'll put the pen down as well.
Please.
For me, I love the Coen brothers when they're good. I know people who love everything they do, but for me, it can be a bit hit and miss sometimes. But this is so on the mark. It's brilliant. It is quite a sad story, but... You don't come out feeling sad, and the performances are brilliant, and I think it's got such a warm heart to it as well.
Despite the cold setting,
very nice guy.
If you want to catch it, it's on tonight at Cineworld at 8:40, or at the Arts Picture House at 9:00, and it will be showing at those cinemas into next week.
It's rated 15 as well.
Okay, yes. I think I might have to put that on the list. I just got a note saying it should go on the list. make a note of that. So still to come, we've got theatre, competition, and next we've got another movie to talk about. What are we going to do? Here's the music first, though.
August, Osage County.
Okay. I wonder if the film Inside Llewyn Davis will lead to some sort of mini folk revival and get people interested in it who wouldn't otherwise.
Would be cool.
You know, it's converted a rocker such as yourself into a folk fan. So, you know, we'll get Les along, see what he has to say about it. Okay, what are we moving to next?
Okay, so up next is August, Osage County, or Osage County.
I keep on saying Orange County, but it's nothing of the sort.
We're still a bit unsure of the pronunciation on that one. Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts lead an exceptional cast in this darkly funny Oscar and BAFTA-nominated comedy drama. After the disappearance of her poet husband, Beverly, played by Sam Shepard, Violet Weston, played by Meryl Streep, summons her widely dispersed her widely dispersed family back to her home in Oklahoma. Over the days that follow, family tensions come to the fore and long-buried secrets are finally revealed. Produced by screen star George Clooney, August Osage County features a stunning A-list cast. Meryl Streep's performance as pill-popping, acid-tongued Violet has earned her an Oscar nomination for Best Actress, while Julia Roberts, playing Violet's strong-willed daughter Barbara, is Oscar-nominated for Best Supporting Actress. It's based on a... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we've got a clip. There we go.
What'd you do to your hair?
I had it straightened.
Why would anybody do that?
Just wanted a change.
You're a pretty girl. Why don't you wear makeup?
Do I need makeup?
Every woman needs makeup. Don't let anybody tell you different. The only woman pretty enough to go without makeup was Elizabeth Taylor. And she wore a ton. Shoulders are all slumped and your hair's all straight. You don't wear makeup. You look like a lesbian.
Mom.
You could get a decent man if you would just spruce up a bit. That's all I'm saying. My tongue is on fire.
You supposed to be smoking?
Is anybody supposed to smoke?
I've read this piece in the paper which suggested that BBC Children's Television have banned their female presenters from wearing red lipstick.
What?
Too provocative.
That's insane.
I know.
Red lipstick is lovely. It makes me feel fabulous. It
makes you look like Snow White.
I'm not wearing any today, but, you know, go with my red hair. Okay. Newly red hair. August Osage County is based on a darkly comedic play by Tracy Letts. And I was absolutely stunned by it. I thought it was fantastic. I think it's one of the better films I've seen in a while. And I know we did our film review of 2013 a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
This is probably going to be in my top 10 for the year.
For 14 already. Just taking them off.
It's fantastic. The performances are so strong and emotional and powerful. And, you know, you're laughing along with them one moment and Meryl Streep will just turn around and completely cut the room. And you're just... There's moments that took my breath away. It was just so well put together. It's beautifully shot. The writing is obviously fantastically on par. Tracy Letts won the 2008 Pulitzer Prize for the play. And I thought it was brilliant.
And George Clooney, who's virtually a local these days, was involved as well.
He produced the play.
Okay.
The film. And I think the other kind of films that he's attached to, or in recent years, it has that kind of feel, that kind of, I don't know, the Clooney touch, maybe.
Do you think he's sort of heading off in that direction, of sort of, you know, directing?
I think so. He's definitely...
Clint Eastwood kind of moment.
He's definitely producing a lot more.
Mm.
He's got Monuments Men coming out, which he's directing as well.
And that was the one, of course, that was actually filmed around here.
Yes.
At least part of it was filmed at Duxford.
Mm. Yes. So, August Osage County, I think, is a fantastic watch. It's, you know, not necessarily one that you need to see on the big screen because it's not full of effects or anything like that. I mean, the landscape is absolutely stunning. It's filmed in Oklahoma, or set in Oklahoma, and
on the plains.
Yes, and I mean, even the house, it's so dark when they first go into it, and gradually as more and more people arrive, it opens up. The curtains are open, the windows are opened.
Brilliant.
But yes, there's revelation after revelation, and
yes, if you like a dysfunctional family,
yes.
Dirty laundry in the wake of a tragedy, then so it's the one to watch.
I don't think it would be fair to say, like, I mean, Meryl Streep is stunning as Violet, but I don't think it would be fair to say that she stole the show, because every performance is so strong, and you don't come away like forgetting anybody or anything.
Does it come in as an ensemble cast? Yeah. Is that what we're looking at?
Absolutely, yeah.
And every bit. Body gets like a fair amount of screen time, great
storyline. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. So what are the times for that one then?
So this one is on tonight at Cineworld at 7:40, so you'll catch it if you're set out now.
If you live next door to Cineworld anyway.
Well, yes. It's not on at View or Arts Picture House tonight, but there are showings at all cinemas later in the week, so.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, that's rated 15 as well.
That's rated 15, okay. Very important piece of information. And competition, shall we go on to that now, Sky? Have
we
you got that?
We can indeed, yes. Very exciting. To celebrate the release of Mr. Peabody and Sherman in cinemas from the 7th of February, we've got some fantastic sets of prizes to give away. Mr. Peabody and Sherman is an all-new comedy adventure for the whole family. Emmy Award winner Ty Burrell voices Mr. Peabody, the world's smartest person who happens to be a dog. When his pet boy Sherman, voiced by Max Charles, uses their time-travelling WABAC machine without permission, events in history spiral out of control to disastrous and comical results. It's up to this most unexpected of father and son teams to somehow put things back on track before the space-time continuum is irreparably destroyed. And there will be previews held in cinemas this weekend, the 1st and 2nd of February. So what we've got is three sets of prizes, which include a spinning top, activity set, dress-up magnets, light-up yo-yo, bow tie pen, lunch tin, puzzle cube and kids t-shirt. And of course, with each set you also get two tickets to see the film, courtesy of Cineworld.
That's very exciting. So, yes. Thank you, Cineworld, we love you.
Yeah, bumper prizes. So there's three sets to give away. You just have to answer this question: what is Mr. Peabody? A, a cat, B, a dog, or C, a monkey? So if you get your answers in,
shall we do it from this time next week when Tim will be looking after things on,
yes,
on 105 Drive? So we'll leave Tim to pull that out of the 105 Drive tombola this time next week. What's the name of that time machine again?
Yes, WABAC.
WABAC.
It stands for Way Back Machine, as it was featured in the Rocky and Bullwinkle show in the 1960s.
Ah, because they were basically Peabody and Sherman is a sort of one of the smaller side cartoons to the Rocky and Bullwinkle show. So there you are.
I see. Yes. Very good. I thought I'd sort of come across them. I do remember Rocky and Bullwinkle, I'm afraid. shall we go through the question one more time?
Yes. What is Mr. Peabody? A cat, a dog, or a monkey?
A dog or a monkey. Okay.
And what's the best way for them to enter?
The best way, multivarious ways, actually. In fact, somebody's already got in there with a text entry.
Oh, gosh.
No, it's quick. You can go to, text 07919 070490 or probably drive at cambridge105.fm on email. Either of those is good, and usually the best ways. Might pop the question on Facebook a little later as well if people want to take part in that. But 7 days or thereabouts, 6 days, I guess, really, to take part, and we'll
great prizes for the kids. For
prize again? What's the prize again?
The prize: spinning top, activity set, dress up magnets, light up yo-yo, bow tie pen, lunch tin, puzzle cube, and kids t-shirt. And, of course, you'll be able to catch the movie for half-term.
Right, now, though, back to the entertainment hour. Skye and Hattie are here, and it's theatre time.
Yes, we've been off to the theatre this week, to see Blue Stockings at the ADC.
It is 1896 at Girton College, Cambridge, and Elizabeth Welsh is preparing for battle. Girton is the first college in Britain to admit women. The girls there have risked everything to go to university. They study ferociously. They match their male peers grade for grade, and they leave empty-handed. While the men graduate and are awarded their degrees, the girls gain only the stigma of being a blue stocking, an unnatural educated woman. They are unqualified and worse, unfit for marriage. In Jessica Swale's debut play, Blue Stockings, Tess Moffat and her fellow first years are determined to win the right to graduate, but little do they anticipate the hurdles in their way, the distractions of love, the cruelty of the class divide, or the strength of the opposition, who will do anything to stop them. The play follows them over one tumultuous year as they do battle against the great intellectual equality of their day. CUADC presents Blue Stockings in its first university production following a critically acclaimed debut at the Globe just 4 months ago. The Blue Stockings return to Cambridge to fight for their right to an education.
And my, do they fight. It is, in terms of the play itself as a piece of writing, it is stunning. Again, we've seen some great pieces this week.
Yes, we have.
It's heartwarming, it's emotional. I mean, and it's actually really quite funny. It has you laughing a lot in the first half, at just with incredulity at the ridiculousness of the things that are being said. I mean, it opens with a lecturer saying that a woman who expends her energy exercising the brain does so at the expense of her vital organs. Well, I mean, that's just laughable nowadays, you know.
What sort of time period is this set?
It's set in 1896.
Okay, so that's I guess also you had the suffragette movement going on at that time as well.
Yes, and that does come into it as well. It's mentioned in and the sort of links between them. So that it's quite interesting in that sense that, you know, there's two sides. You know, these women are fighting for their right to education, but at the same time, one is very much in support of women getting the vote and the other one doesn't want them to get politically involved because they feel that that's going to damage their status even further. It's obviously, it's politically charged, but I think for a contemporary audience to sit and watch, it's... especially for myself, having graduated last year, it's just unthinkable that, you know, I might have been denied the right to be educated just because I'm female.
It's quite astounding, actually. On the one hand, you've got that, then on the other hand, it's only like the 1970s and 80s. You know, there were still colleges around this city that only let men in.
Yes, absolutely. You do find out at the end. Obviously, you know, no spoilers or anything, but you do find out at the end just when they were allowed to graduate. And it's surprising.
very much so. It was a theme as well, of course. There was Ronnie Drew's play as well a short while ago about the... I'm trying to remember the title of it. It was to do with the double helix and Watson and Crick.
Yeah.
And a third person who was a woman who, surprise, surprise, well, this was Ronnie's argument that she was slightly written out of history because she was a girl and wasn't one of the two who famously invented DNA over a pint. In the Eagle.
I mean, it's interesting as well because one of the opening scenes is one of their first lectures, and their lecturer, Mr. Banks, who's played by I can't remember his name, but he's brilliant. Gabriel, is it Kagan? I'm not sure. He's fantastic, excellent performance. And he says to them, "You're scientists now, like you're not women anymore, you're scientists." And it's a bit like, you know, how would people like Marie Curie feel about, you know, that kind of you can either be a scientist or a woman. And that's almost what happens, because they lose any kind of respect that they might have had in going through an education. You know, they're not going to... or they have very little faith in the fact that they might get married in the future because they're a blue stocking.
Count against them on the womanhood side of things.
Hugely so. One of the lecturers, Miss Blake, who's played again fantastically by Olivia Emden, says that, you know, she's never going to get married now. She's an older woman, and wanting to be educated has completely lost her any right of, or you know, any possibility of having a family. And again, it's just like, what? It's to begin with, it's kind of hard to get your head around. And I think that's why there's so much laughter. There are genuinely funny moments, but there's also parts of it when you're just like, I can't believe people.
So that's
thought
a serious
this
play with the sort of, I guess, some lines you almost do have to play for laughs to
yes,
a certain extent.
And it's, absolutely.
The situation sounding, although true, sounding rather absurd.
Yes, but it's done really sensitively and powerfully as well. There's a heartbreaking moment where one of the characters, Maeve Sullivan, played by Sarah Livingstone, has to leave. And your heart just bleeds for her. It's absolutely heartbreaking, but that in itself, the situation, obviously, spoilers, the situation demands that, you know, she either has to choose again between family or education, and in the end, the decision is taken out of her hands. Somebody else makes a decision for her. But, the scene where she leaves is set against a fantastic speech by one of the central characters, Mrs. Welsh, played by Isabel Kettle, and she's giving a speech to the board about women's education, about the right to graduate, and Maeve is in the background having to leave because she has to choose family over an education.
Very, very well done.
I think it's a very well created production. Setting and the costumes all work in its favour. There's quite a few sort of empty scenes almost where it is just focusing mainly on the characters' interaction compared to, you know, what's around them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was very impressed with it.
I mean, the set alone is quite remarkable. I mean, they take you everywhere from an orchard to a fabric shop to a lecture hall to their halls of residence with a room at the back upstairs. And I did... When that room at the back is first revealed, I was a bit like, oh gosh, are we going to be able to hear them? They're quite far back. But it actually works really well. And there aren't, I didn't feel there were any issues there and that you could hear everything that they were saying. But the cast are just superb. There's not a weak link in that cast. They are all fantastic. Sophia Flohr, who plays Tess Moffat, is brilliant as a central character, and you really follow her and you really feel for her. It, you know what? It's the kind of play that you could see being turned into a Sunday evening show,
like a drama,
like Downton Abbey, yeah. Like Mr. Selfridge, something like that. But yeah, it's very well written and very popular, and it's great to be able to have it here in Cambridge as well.
And very much so. So because you mentioned at the beginning, it has played at the Globe, did you
it
say?
It had its debut at the Globe last year, yes. So this is its first,
first time in Cambridge.
Amateur production.
Okay. that's good. All right.
Yes. So that's on from tonight until Saturday at 7:45 with a matinee on Saturday at 2:30. Tickets are £10 and £8. Now, tickets are sold out for the run, but the ADC are expecting to release a small number of day seats on the day of each production for that for that evening's
show. And how do you go about getting those? Do you just have to hang around the website? Or
you can call into the box office.
Okay.
So you can either go into the box office on Park Street or call in at 1 o'clock when the box office opens on 01223 300085. Priority is given to customers at the counter, and then they're released for web sales at 1:30 if there are any. So if you can, I would recommend going down there.
Is it often that a production at the ADC gets sold out this far in advance?
Yeah, it's quite frequent, actually.
Oh, really?
Which is fantastic. Maybe. It's always great to see a show sell out.
I would say they need to build an extension of that, because all sorts of trouble, wouldn't it, right?
So also this week at the ADC, we've got Alcestis, which is the late show, which is an adaptation of Euripides. Euripides by Ted Hughes. Tickets are £6 and £5. That's 11 o'clock tonight until Saturday. Also, at the Arts Theatre this week, from tonight until Saturday, is the Cambridge University Marlowe Society's production of Dr. Faustus. You can find more booking information on the Cambridge Arts Theatre website. I love Dr. Faustus. It's one of my favourites. So next week, around Cambridge as well, give you a bit of what's coming up. So at the ADC, the main show there is the 1984, running Tuesday to Saturday at 7:45 p.m. And at the Corpus Playroom, there's Punk Rock Tuesday to Saturday at 7 o'clock, and Derrigade Tuesday to Saturday at 9:30, also at the Corpus Playroom. Around Cambridge, we've got the Children's Hour, which is quite an interesting one to see if you're also seeing Blue Stockings. It covers sort of not so much the right to education, but it's set in a school and covers LGBT rights. So that's quite interesting as well. And that's at the Pembroke Cellars, Tuesday to Saturday at 7 o'clock. You can get your tickets at adcticketing.com or from the ADC box office. And at West Road Concert Hall is Cambridge University Gilbert and Sullivan Society's production of Pirates of Penzance, running Wednesday to Saturday at 7:45 p.m. So that's a great family-friendly one. One of my favourite musical songs. I am the very model of a modern major general. I don't ask me to sing it because I don't know all of the words.
I'm the very model of a modern major general.
Yes, of information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. And some members of the cast and crew came in yesterday.
Chatted with Merlin, weren't they? And
to chat about the production, and they gave out a discount code. So if you're listening and you'd like to go and see Pirates of Penzance, you can get £2 discount off opening night tickets. So that's the Wednesday night next week. If you use the discount code Cambridge105.
Oh, that works, doesn't it?
So it's all lowercase, Cambridge105, and you can pop that into the website, or you can ring into the box office and provide the code and you'll be able to get your discount.
Excellent. Hattie, Skye, thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Tim, we'll see you next week. He's looking after Thursday.
Yes, have a lovely time away, Julian.
I will. Thank you very much.
Bye.